Hey, it's Ryan from the Art of Paying Attention, where paying attention is our proper and endless work. Hey, everybody. So glad to see you. So glad to be back with you. It's been a couple weeks, and I'm so excited to be back again with another fantastic interview. Ali Hurriyat is here with us, and he is from Compassiviste Publishing. And it is a fantastic company, a publishing company that is trying to make a dent for good in the world. And it's a very unique model of publishing. And a lot of their revenue goes to causes and helping people and serving people. And so it's just a really interesting model of publishing that you will enjoy. And so all that information will be in the show notes. You can check that out, find out what they're doing. But I'm so excited to talk to Ali today. And hey, it's been a couple minutes. So good to be back with you. I'm in the thick of a writing project that should be done by the time you hear my voice. I'll talk more about that at some point. But yeah, it's taken a lot of time. And so it took a couple weeks to get the podcast out in the world. But we are glad to be back with you. Glad to be sharing these hopefully inspirational, encouraging interviews and people doing interesting work in the world, and really sharing what people are paying attention to, because really that's what this show is all about. And people are paying attention to all kinds of things, and as we share these, we hope that it kind of sparks something in you to ask the question, what am I paying attention to? What am I noticing? What's important to me? What's important to my life, my world, my family, my community? What am I making? What am I doing? How am I making a dent in the world? So glad to have Ali on the show to help us do that well. And yeah, just a couple things before we get into the interview. Just want to remind you, if you are new to the show or you've been around and haven't signed up for the newsletter on the Substack, please go ahead and do that. It's a great way to stay updated. I also every week send out 7 things I'm paying attention to. So you can check that on out. It could be films, could be books, could be quotes, could be whatever, all kinds of things I'm using, things I'm doing, but hopefully just a way to kind of encourage you toward whatever you're making, and also encourage you towards a better life and what all of that entails. So check out the newsletter, stay connected to the community. Also, just want to let you know, if you are interested at all in your next project, getting some help on that, getting some, call it consulting, call it coaching, call it help, call it encouragement. There's a opportunity for some book coaching, not even book coaching. If you're interested in just coaching in general, you're having a struggle, you need some counsel, some direction, some help, you can go to the coaching tab and I can help you with that. We can set up a time to meet and help you with your life, your project, whatever's going on in your life. So I'd love to help you in that, encourage you in that. So check on that on out. And that'd be a great way for us to connect. So hope you are well. Hope you are making great art with your life. And I want to get on to my interview with Ali. So here's Ali from Compassiviste Publishing. Welcome, Ali, to the show, and so glad to have you on. And if you've ever listened to this podcast, the question is always, the first introduction question is, what are you paying attention to?
Well, hello. Thank you for having me. I am paying attention to you right now, asking me that question. But essentially, I've been paying attention to compassion for the last 5 years. That's been my focus, and, Compassiviste. That's what I do. And compassion's the focus.
Yeah, I love that. Somebody reached out to me and was saying, hey, this guy started this publishing company and it's kind of rooted in compassion and love, and kind of there's a unique story behind that. So I want to talk to you a little bit about kind of you are the founder of a compassion-driven publishing company, if you want to call it that. I want to hear a little more about the story behind you starting this, because it does come from somewhere, and I think it's an interesting story. So why don't you say it in your own words?
Okay. A little backstory first. I used to be in the finance world, and I was doing really well. And one day I had enough. There was no more happiness. It was just a lot of money, and it was just nothing meaningful. I quit. I stopped. I gave away my money. And I restarted my life. And when I restarted my life, I realized the reason why I was not happy is because there was no passion in my life. And there was no empathy and there was no compassion. And there was nothing valuable happening in my life. And once you reach a certain limit of making money, you kind of reach that limit, whether it's, you know, 100 million or 2 billion, it's kind of over the top. You're already in that 1% category. You don't feel the difference on a day-to-day basis. And then it just becomes boring if you're not doing what your passion is. So it could be some people, you know, are actively pursuing their passion and other people just happen to become successful in their work. And I was one of those people who was successful in their work, but not passionate about their work. And so I took a few years off and I actually went and traveled. And I started writing because I used to always write. And it was my kind of, you know, getaway, so to speak. And so I showed a friend of mine who is an agent, a literary agent, some of the writing. And she said, wow, there's some good stuff. And I said, really? And she said, yeah. And I was like, okay. And she said, let's see if we can get you, you know, some kind of publishing here. And it started there. And I said, well, okay. And so, you know, she approached a couple of people. And actually, one of the biggest publishing companies turned around and said, we're interested, because he's written quite a bit. And at that point, I've written the equivalent of 8 books. Some of them were full books and some of them were just compilations. And I said, okay, let's talk. And at this point, I really wanted to focus my work on making a difference. And to me, you know, I see a lot of people, they're environmental activists, they're animal rights activists, and they're all these different categorized activists. And for me, it's all joined together. So you can't really care about, you know, environmental issues and not throw in, you know, the climate refugee issues and poverty and things like that, because people's lives are getting upended because of climate change, right? And the poorest get hit most. So you can't really differentiate here. So when I spoke to the publishing company, I said, hey, I don't want to print my books, not just because of the environmental factor, but, you know, there are children, slave labor, who are binding these books. You don't have all the numbers there. And then the logging of the paper, you know, a lot of industry reports say about 90% of paper that's logged is illegally logged. So how do you, you know, my pages are contributing to all of this. And then you want me to do a book tour, you know, around the US and Europe and stuff like that. And that's going to be on what, a chartered flight, or, you know, somehow it's going to get me around. And so when I take all of this into effect, if I just burn my book and sit at home, I'm doing the world more of a favor than to publish this book. So how much impact could I possibly have? And we started arguing about that. And, you know, they started, and I showed them, I said, you know, your own organization is doing this and I can't be a part of that. And so they wouldn't have any of that. And then there was a lot of, you need to chuck this out. You need to change this. You can't say this. We'd rather you don't say that. And, you know, what I was saying was being twisted into what they wanted to market, what was sellable, for all these reasons. And I'm the type of person who will say, no, I'll put my foot down. I don't care how much money you're throwing at me. Because I was there, I was escaping that, and they didn't know that. And so I said, no, you know what? The value is what matters to me, not, you know, being famous. I could buy a bestseller. I don't need to, you know, come through you guys. A couple of million dollars buys a bestseller these days. That's what the New York bestseller list is, essentially. It's a paid promotion. And so I said, no, I walked away. That's when I started thinking. I spoke to a couple of other people in the industry and they said, this is the industry. I mean, every industry is like this, you know, any artistic industry is like this. So I said, okay, this is what we're going to do. We're going to build our own publishing house, not for any vanity purpose, but we're going to allow all the people who have something to say, who are being silenced, who are not being represented, who can't even get to a literary agent, who can't go through all these hoops just to be just to have their books, you know, on a shelf somewhere. And we're going to do this with compassion, and we're going to do it right. We're not going to print. We're going to explain the difference. We're going to talk about the slavery that goes on in the publishing world. We're going to talk about all the environmental issues, all the books that get burned when they don't get sold, but they get printed in mass, all these things. And so we're going to activate through the publishing house. So the publishing house, Compassivis Publishing, is part of the Compassivis Octopus, which is, you know, eight-tentacled, octopus, essentially. And this is one arm, and this is one activism arm of it, trying to fight social injustice through one arm of art, which is poetry and writing and all sorts of fiction and nonfiction.
No, I love this, because I think you're doing what I think a lot of people could do if they wanted to. When you think about a company, you think about people, you don't think about what's around it or the way it affects, you know, communities and individuals, and that you can actually use the company as a kind of springboard or a vehicle to do good in the world. I've always had that question too, just being, a writer myself and publishing and all that, is how many books, that were printed that, nobody reads, and they're just stacked up somewhere, never get sold. It's like, what happens to all those, right? You think of that when you go to a restaurant, and you just think of all the food every day that's just, half of it's not eaten, and it just goes to waste, mm-hmm. or what have you. So when you were kind of thinking through all these implications around publishing, not just your own work, but also just the impact that it has and what it would cost and all those things, what was kind of the starting point when you started either talking about this idea or pitching this idea? I mean, was there pushback? Was there, this is crazy, this can't happen? What was kind of the, where'd you begin, and how'd you kind of, like, what were like the first steps to kind of get this going?
Well, the good part about it was I had started Compassivis Foundation, which is the charity arm of the Compassivis Octopus. And the idea was that I'm going to dedicate the sales of my books to Compassivis Foundation. So actually, Compassivis Publishing is a not-for-profit publishing house. So it's a social enterprise kind of system. And I thought to myself, this is great. I set up the charity. I have Compassivis as a movement, and I'm setting up the publishing house. And now through the work, through the word and the writing and the poetry, we can, put word out there that there is a movement here. There is some compassion-led element. And so I started thinking, how do I push this out aside from just my own books or the authors that will come and I will sign and I will, promote their work? I thought about an anthology quarterly that would be about a specific topic. One would be, for example, visions of peace. Another one would be about, animal rights. Another one would be about environmental issues specifically to some cause. And, people can contribute to this. You can have celebrities, you can have new voices with really cool new ideas that, they can't get out there, but they're amazing. Put them in those anthologies and try to make those sales dedicated to a cause that is related to these through the charity. So when people donate, it all helps and supports. And I got to a point where a lot of people were saying, but wait, authors are not going to give you the books. And I said, why? And they said, they want money. And I said, yeah, we'll give them their money. We're talking about our share. We're talking about Compassivis Publishing's share. And they said, how much are you willing to give them? And a lot of people said, well, the industry standard is the publishing house takes 70%, traditional publishing house, not a hybrid, not a vanity. And I said, okay, then we'll take 50%. We'll give half to the people who are bringing the work. And on top of it, we will leave the work in their name, the rights to them. We won't take their rights because it's their work, it's their expression. How am I going to be the owner of somebody else's expression, right? It just doesn't make sense. It's like everything else that's happening in the world today. I mean, you have a house, you have a mortgage, you don't own your house. The bank owns your house, but somehow you pretend that you own your house. But I don't want it to feel that way. I want the author to have full control, full right, full say, full freedom of speech, full freedom of expression, because those are values that are based in democracy that comes from compassion, that comes from the essence of trying to make and build a better world. And a lot of people left. So when you say, what pushback was there? A lot of people left. And they left because they thought I'm crazy. And these were people that I'd approached originally, and they were from the industry. They were from the publishing world, and they left because the model was just too out of the box for a traditional publishing house. And if you know about publishing, or not even publishing, but many, many industries are rooted in this traditional sense of this is how it works, and it's successful in this way. You know, there's a barrier to entry. If you can break through that barrier, if you have the funding or the means to break through that barrier, you follow those steps and, you know, hope to God and pray that you become successful. Now, once you take a step to the left, people say, oh, you know, that may not work, that's risky and whatnot. And that's what I was doing. But now I'm really excited because before we even launched, the word of mouth, people we knew, people working with us, people working on some of the apps that we're building for Compassive East and other parts in the kitchen and the art program, they knew people who were writers and they told them about the whole deal. One thing led to another, and people started calling and reaching out and emailing and saying, hey, I heard you're doing this. And I say, yeah, and like, we'd like to kind of pitch our ideas. And then really cool books came through that a couple of them even had had a contract somewhere else. One of the first ones we're going to release had a contract somewhere else, and they pulled the plug on that and came here because they believed in it. They believed in what I was trying to do. They said, you're crazy, but I believe in you. I said, great.
Well, I think this is great because, from the, we talked to a lot of authors and writers and people listen to the show, a lot of writers, want to either have already written things or want to get published is kind of what you're describing too, is in the publishing world is people don't realize what you're paying for or how the rights work and all that. So like when you're connected to a publisher, like they own you. I mean, they can do whatever they want with your book. You can't do anything mm-hmm. with it. You can't go to another publisher. You can't distribute it. You can't, it's all under lock and key under a contract. Usually it's like 7 years or more. Mm-hmm. And so those are things that I think when people get into writing or publishing, they just think, well, I just want to get paid for it. I just want to make money. I just want my work out there. But they don't think about the long-term benefits of someone like yourself who says, hey, you can actually own your rights. It's your work. Like you should be able to do what you want with it. And I like this idea of, hey, maybe if we take our revenue down, yeah, we're going to lose a little bit of money, but for the good, the bigger, the greater good, mm-hmm. we can do things a little bit differently. And I think that's the challenge, I think, in any industry, and especially publishing, is like, this is how we've always done it. And this is the only way to do it. And really it's about marketing. It's about who has the biggest name. I mean, most publishing houses live off, one or two huge authors, and the mm-hmm. rest, that's why the rest people don't get any marketing dollars, because it all has to go to,
right.
The main people, yes, who are going to make millions of dollars. Right. And then you get, you have to make capitalistic decisions instead of, like you're saying, voices that maybe are neglected, themes that are maybe neglected. Like you said, even in your own experience, I couldn't say this, I couldn't do that, because it's all about, well, this isn't going to make us money, or this might be offensive, or this might be, people aren't going to want this, or whatever. I mean, whatever the thing is, or they don't have enough followers on Facebook, or, whatever
right.
it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Those are all realities.
Yeah. Those become, you start making different decisions. You start making mm-hmm. institutional decisions, because we have to keep the institution going.
Exactly.
As opposed to, well, what's the best art we can kind of share with the world. Right. I think this is really, thought through and unique, and I really think that this is kind of be more the norm than not going in the future. I hope so, at least. People that are thinking outside the box. Let's get in a little bit of the weeds of your work. And an author comes to you, they got a manuscript, they're thinking about something. How do those initial conversations work? I mean, how do they approach you? How do they go about, like, hey, I got this idea, or I got this book and I don't know, I'm shopping it around, or maybe this is a good fit, or, talk us through kind of your process of deciding who to work with, who not to work with, those kinds of things.
Okay. So we have the website, compassiveeastpublishing.com, and essentially you can submit directly there. We have our team. We look at the submission, and it could be, an idea. It could be a full manuscript, whatever it is. The catch here is it doesn't even have to be about social issues or something related to compassion. You could write a comedy book. You could write a children's book, whatever it may be, right? The point is, you're going to use your art to do something good for the world. So I have a stipulation in there, in the contract, that says, I'm giving you 50% as an author. However, you're obliged by this contract to give 5% of your 50% to a charity. It could be Compassus Foundation and one of our causes. It could be a charity you're supporting. It could be something you start with your book, you know, a cause. You could be writing about, you could be a professor writing about disability. And now you, you know, this 5% kickstarts your program, your, you know, funding for your disability program that you're talking about in the book, for example. So you approach us on the website, you submit, we get back to you. And if we like the work, then we tell you, okay, we're interested. And it's exactly what I said. Here's 50%, half you, half me. And our half goes directly into the causes that Compassus Foundation runs. And your half is yours to do what you want. We're hoping you don't buy a Ferrari with it, but you know, it's up to you. You're free to do that. And you know, as long as you give 5% to some good, and hopefully, you know, it's purposed that way. Now, the thing you said something earlier about one or two authors carrying a publishing house and then nobody else gets, they just get the book out there, but nothing else. We don't do that. So we have an equitable approach. And in that sense, we pledge the same initial marketing dollars to every book that comes our way that we're going to publish. So everybody gets the same amount, the same structure. We have a social media team, we have a PR team, we have all these people working there. And every author that is published gets the same direction. And now it comes down to what you do with your support. So if you're an author who says, I've written the book, I really don't want the money, I don't care, I'm just going to relax on my beach house, that it's going to stop there. It's not going to grow. The work's not going to grow. That's natural. But if you're an author who says, thank you for providing me all these platforms, all these spaces, and promoting me to this extent, I'm going to push myself as well and work, because that's what it's about. So we're working to get your word out there. We're providing you with the platform. And think about, we're giving you a microphone. We're giving you all these tools that can grow you for free so that you can grow. And it's a two-way street. As you grow as an author, we can move more of our causes for social good and you make more money. And as you grow, your second book will grow with you and it'll grow faster. So we never look at it as, you know, Tom here, wow, he's making a million in sales. We're gonna put $100,000 into Tom, but Jerry over here, you know, he's not really doing that well. He's the only people who bought his book are his family. So we're just not gonna support him. But if Jerry has something really important to say, then we're gonna push Jerry after for that to come out, because it's important, it's valuable. And so this goes back to, you know, the beginning of the first steps when we receive submissions. Just as an example, you know, Prince Harry's book Spare, say he decided, I like what these guys are doing, I'm going to go here and submit to them. Great, you know, it's going to bring a lot of sales, and we're going to use it to a lot of our causes and everything like that. So we're not going to say no to it, even though potentially inside the book, there's not going to be much that is dedicated to social change. But then Jerry, as we said, has an amazing book about social change, steps that are tangible, that can make a difference in the world, that people should follow. We'll also take that. Now, equitably, we will use and leverage the sales from Prince Harry to Jerry, so that we can promote Jerry's work, which is essentially more valuable to the entire construct of what Compassivi stands for. So everybody kind of huddles together in the publishing house. It's not a space where Prince Harry has a contract and he's only interested about his contract, and Jerry has got, everybody's in this together. And that's what the collective is about. So we promote the collective. And I think with the collective, you can't lose. You have too much power to lose.
That's really great. I love that. So when do you, let's see, how should I say this? When people come to you, do you have like editors and designers, and I mean, it's like full service.
Yes.
You know, yes. They'll put your book together. It's not like you have to come.
All you have to do is have written a book. Mm-hmm. We're not going to write a book for you. So you come with a book, and you come with a book, and if it needs work, we have editors. They do all kinds of editing, from developmental to line it, all of it. They do all of that. They've done it for my books. So I have 13 books. They've done it for mine. And we have artists who, again, my books were done by our own in-house artists, the covers. They can see it on the website. And they'll do that work, and everything else, distribution channels, you know, all of that's taken care of. We're, like I said, we're a full traditional publishing house. The only thing we don't do is the immorality of a full traditional publishing house.
Yeah. So how does that work as far as, you mentioned like print and things like that? Do you still do print, or do you use different outlets? No print, or
no
audio, print, all that?
Yes, so we'll do audio, and we'll do digital. And you know, even with the, and a lot of it is also to, we have this on the website. I mean, we have a page that discusses why we don't do print. A lot of people say, oh, but there's sustainable print now. And I say, well, maybe there is print that is somewhat sustainable. And when I say somewhat, I mean, you'd have to weed through all the nonsense of, I'm printing 50,000 books, but I'll plant 7 trees as well. Well, you know, that those 7 trees are not really offsetting that. Let's not kid ourselves. So we're honest where we, you know, place our bets. And now, having said that, you know, we don't print not only because of the environmental issue. We don't print because of a lot of the other social issues, the logistics, all these things, right? And so we explain this to our authors, and we educate them if they don't know. If they say, hey, why don't you print? And I'll tell them, look at all of this, and this is why we don't print. And right now, you know, digital is catching on. I mean, 35% of books are digital now, as opposed to, you know, 5% a decade ago. So it's really catching on. And also, you know, we bust some of the myths. I mean, these big publishing houses, they've hired a lot of scientists, a lot of people to write these articles in, you know, A-list magazines to say, but, you know, when you buy an e-reader, it also contributes to environmental disasters and blah, blah, blah. And I say, wait a minute, why did that even come into play? Does not almost everybody who reads a book have a smartphone? Do they not have laptops? Read on that. You don't need to buy a new device to carry or lug around with you just to plug in your phone, to plug in this device to read this book. You can use your iPhone. You can use your MacBook. You can use whatever device you have. So, you know, we bust those myths. We work through them, and we explain to people why it's better. And that becomes part of the work, part of the good work. So the author, the Compassivist publishing author, when they go out on the street, you know, when she goes out on the street, she says, people say, hey, you know, Anne, where is your book? You know, can I get a copy? Can I get a signed copy and stuff? Oh, but I only do digital. Why? Now Anne explains the whole story. And that person says, I'm never buying a print book again, because I'm not going to read a book that I know 90% of it is destroying forests illegally and potentially being bound by children in slavery. And on top of it, going burnt at the end of their life cycle instead of being purposed to so many places that don't have books. I mean, do you know how many people can't afford books? Just give it. No, it's the same thing as the fashion industry. We burn the fashion industry because they do that. We attack them and we say, oh, this is horrible, whatever. But we don't do that with the big five in publishing. We don't say, where is that 12 million copies that you printed that only 2 million got sold? Where's the other 10 million? Can you show us? No, it's in that big bonfire.
Yeah. No, I love this. This is really, really great. I think it's, again, very thoughtful, and I think addressing issues and questions that most people aren't really thinking about. You know, we just, you know, and it is hard, right? It's we do have, you know, some would say compassion fatigue. Because there are so many needs and so many things, and it's kind of like, what do I attach myself to? What do I research? What do I get into? You know, because there's so many things, right? I mean, you mentioned them all, you know, human rights and animals and climate and, you know, you name it, right? It's difficult to know like where to focus your attention, but I love the way you're using your company as a kind of talking point as well. Like, I love that idea of an author that can go, hey, let me tell you a little story behind why I don't have print, you know. Mm-hmm. and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, I never knew that. Like, I mean, that's kind of how it starts, right? Yeah. And I know here in America, I mean, I have some friends who, you know, are, you know, African-American friends who are trying to help people understand kind of the history of African-American, mm-hmm. you know, plight in America. And it's, they start telling stories and you're going, oh, I never knew that. I didn't learn that in school. Like, tell me more. Right. And they're writing books and they're, you know, those kinds of things.
Right.
I love that. That's how
I'll tell you something that also, you know, you brought up African-American. So I lived in Toronto for 20 years. 15 of those 20 years, I did not know about residential schools because you did not hear about them anywhere. So the Indigenous community, the people, you heard nothing of that in Toronto, nothing of that. And so I was oblivious to the fact that this happened. And this happened up until the point where I moved to Canada. I mean, I moved there in 91. This was just ending then, right? And I didn't know. I quickly learned, you know, about the Maple Leafs and, you know, the Blue Jays, and they won the World Series, you know, in 93, right. Joe Carter and everything. And I had no clue what baseball was moving to the country for the, you know, moving to North America. And, you know, all these things I learned quickly, the drop of a pin, I learned about them, but I never got to know about, you know, the Indigenous community and how they suffered in the residential schools. And it took 15 years for me to hear from somebody who learned in college. I mean, it was a child of a friend of mine who came home one day crying, hey, what happened? And we thought something happened at school, like, you know, somebody bullied her or something. And she's crying because of residential schools. And I said, what's residential schools? And when she started opening up, myself and her dad are like, wow. Are you sure? Like, are you sure? Right. We had to go online, right? Like, we couldn't believe it. And so these kind of things happen. And like you said, you know, the education level is really, it's not a matter of compassion. It's a matter of education. Mm-hmm. You don't need to delve deep into every issue, every social issue to know where your compassion should lie. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll take anybody to a slaughterhouse and tell them, kill that baby lamb and eat it. And they won't, but they'll order it at the restaurant. They'll order the fillet at the restaurant. You know, it just takes that creative moment in your mind to think of, what am I eating? How is this brought to the table? How is this animal tortured? How is this Indigenous person killed? How all of these structures that I see around me happened? How were the slaves brought from Africa? One of my books, Capital Racism, discusses that exactly. I mean, racism is partly an instrument of capitalism because it reduces cost. And capitalism's motto is profit maximization. So if you can't increase the sale price, I mean, you know, me and you will both have ice cream at $1, at $2, at $5, at $7. I doubt that we'll buy ice cream that costs $120 a scoop, right? Now, so they can't increase the price after a certain point because it becomes, you know, crazy. And so they'll stick with the $7, but then they say, we're greedy. We still want more profit. What do? We reduce our costs. What's better than zero cost labor? You can't get cheaper than that. What's zero cost labor? Slavery. Okay, let's do that. Let's make that happen, right? So it gets induced and you know, they play with people's minds and all the other things that happened and eugenics and all of that stuff, even modern, like when I say eugenics, modern stuff, eventually you get to the point where people accept and believe this, right? And they believe the narrative. And then you have this United States that is in the state and shape that it is right now with racism and with police brutality and with all the problems that the minorities face. It's a lack of education. It's not a lack of compassion. Not many Americans, I've spent a lot of time in the U.S., not many Americans inherently have hate in them. It gets bred. And the reason you can breed hate is because a person is uneducated to the ways that you're expressing this breeding method. So they buy into it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it just becomes normalized, right?
Right.
This is all we know. This is what we do. This is how it is. Right. You don't think.
But at the same time, But at the same time, the U.S. is, has the highest rate of donations in the world, nationally speaking. You guys give the most amount of money per capita. Now, I'm not talking because you have 400 million population, another country has 10 million. Naturally, you give more, but per capita, you're number one in the world. And the reason is, the country was essentially, the history of the country, part of it was built on compassion. If people, same thing as Canada, part of it was built on compassion. And that has stayed in the fabric of the community and in the communities and in the neighborhoods. And when disaster hits, when 9/11 happened, when Katrina happened, when just now the floods in LA, I have friends there who are telling me, oh, we're in Pacific Palisades. And I said, what are you doing all the way there? You live, in Hollywood. Oh, we got flooded there. And my friend said, come over here. And now we're staying here until we figure out what's that. So there is that bond. It's not a, it's not this cowboy country where people just pull guns and kill each other. So there's a lot of compassion, but it's an educational issue. So what Compassive Publishing is doing here is it's raising the bar on education. So the capitalist doesn't misuse capitalism as an opportunity vehicle to satisfy their greed. It's not an attack on capitalism, because there's nothing wrong with the community doing the best that they can so that the entire community lives better. And that was the objective of capitalism. But then some people said, hey, if I do this, I can double my money. But never mind all the people who suffer. Mm-hmm. I'll double my money. And so the JP Morgans and everybody else got created. And that's the same thing in the publishing industry right now. There's a handful of people that control the entire print world. And so why is this happening? Because a lack of education on the consumer part. We go into our bookstores, we buy. We don't ask questions, we buy. It's not a matter of compassion. It's a matter of education.
Well, yeah, I appreciate you educating us for sure and making us aware. I think what's really cool is, most people that start things, you have to go through that first to kind of experience that pinch point and realize, I had no idea. You went through that going, I didn't know all this stuff. I didn't know, the way books are made and the way they're, wasted and forestry and all that. And I didn't, when you go through it, it changes you, right? It's mm-hmm. it's going, oh, I can never see it. I can never unsee it now. I can, that's the gift, right? And so that, I imagine that comes out in all you do in your company and your decisions and things like that. So I do have to ask this. And again, this isn't, maybe as compassionate as it could be, but it's always a question, just because it's something that writers hate talking about it, but it changes so fast all the time. And obviously you're starting, your company's fairly new, I'm assuming, how do you get the word out? How do you market? Like what has been effective in just kind of, everyone has different opinions. Everybody, obviously you're in this world and you're trying to help authors, because they have stories they want to tell, and good stories and mm-hmm. important stories mm-hmm. and compassionate stories, right? But yeah, what would you say is like kind of what's been helpful? What's been good? Other than just like, hey, we need some ads and just throw some money at it. But what's been kind of helpful, even if people that are listening going, how do I get my, my voice out there? What's been good for you?
I'll break it down to you. First of all, it's an internal decision. Do you want to sell a lot of books or do you want to make an impact? Those are two completely different things. You can sell a lot of books by exactly what you said. Throw some money on the table, you'll sell a lot of books because that's the design. You have enough ads, you have enough marketing, you have enough books out there. Put your books on the shelf, go in and buy them yourself. It'll just rank up, simple. If you want to be a famous author or whatever, you have a lot of money, it can be done. That's not what this is about. So what I believe is, first, you have to have a belief that you follow through in your work. So when you write, when you want to publish, what is the reason you wrote? What is the reason you want to publish? And I ask, people should pay attention to this in every aspect of their life. And this is what Compassivista is about. Compassivista, I coined this word. It means compassionate activist. It means have passion and compassion for the people around you in everything, in all your actions, in everything you do. And so when an author says, I'm going to sit here and I'm going to write this book. Okay, why? Why are you trying to write this book? What's the purpose of it? First, you need that purpose. Now you get the purpose. You have a purpose. You say, you know what? I'm going to write a book about animal rights because I have this angle on animal rights that I've never heard or I rarely or seldom hear. And I really think that if I put this on paper and I write it in the way that I understand it best, that once it comes out, a lot of people are going to support this and advocate for it. Great. You have a good first step. You have a good purpose. It's strong. Now you put pen to the paper, colloquially speaking, but better fingers to keyboard. And so, you know, you have a book after some time. Now you take the book. And again, you don't want to throw your book, like you said, somewhere where they own you and where they change it and where they, you know, do whatever they want. You want to go somewhere where you have as much control in the mission that you're trying to accomplish as possible. And that means working with a group that believes in the work that you're doing and not see just the dollar signs of the work that you're doing. So when we publish someone, we believe in what they're doing. We believe in the story they're trying to tell. So now I'm going to sit there and say, I like your idea. You know, your idea, that hook about how you want to come around with the animal rights. It's perfect. I like it. Let's do it. We're going to support you. I find today social media is key. Traditional publishing roots, traditional PR, not so much, because the world listens on social media. It's just a fact. The world listens on social media. The thing people are talking about the most in the morning is what happened overnight in social media most of the time, you know, unless it's some tragedy or war or something that obviously, again, it spreads through social media. So you need to be out there, and to be on social media actively, you're not going to sell your book by having, you know, influencers promote it even and stuff like that, because that only has a shelf life of, you know, a little bit, a little long, and some people who buy and then that's it, it'll die. But if you have advocates for your book, pushing your ideas, pushing your theories. So let's just say, you know, the animal activist writer, Pamela Anderson, big animal activist, you know, she looks at this and says, wow, this person's onto something. I'm going to push the book. I'm going to promote it. I'm going to promote the ideas in the book, not just the book. Even if your book doesn't sell, what are you doing? Your ideas are moving. And that's the idea of a book. It's a space that holds your thought and transports it to another person. That's what it is. It's not a physical asset that you're trying to sell. It's the idea. So through social media, we try to put your idea out there from the book. Now, people like the idea. They're going to buy the book. They're going to read it. They're going to understand what you're trying to say. And you follow through with it because you're an advocate for your ideas. You're the first believer in your ideas. That's how you make people believe in you. And if they believe in you, they believe in your book and your writing and what you're trying to say. And most of the greatest minds in the world, in our world, who have written books, have been respected for what they have to say aside from the book. A lot of people like Nietzsche. A lot of people like Gandhi. A lot of people like a lot of different, you know, people, but they don't necessarily go and buy their books. They don't necessarily, not so many people have read anything that Malcolm X has written, but they watch the film. They hear the little snippets here and there. They see the social media. They see people talk about them. So that writing doesn't necessarily have to be sold through the cover. It has to be sold through the movement. And that's what we try to do through social media, is try to sell the movement of the book, which is why it's so important to come in with a purpose to Compassivis Publishing and not come in with, I got a cool story. If you guys publish it, why? Why do you have a cool story? Tell me what this story means to you. Where is it going? Why did you write it? Why did you spend so much time doing this as opposed to helping at the soup kitchen?
So do you guys do fiction?
Yeah. We do fiction, we do poetry, we do nonfiction, we do series. We're actually working on a couple of two series right now. We have poetry. We have a really cool, it's coming out soon, so you'll hear about it. We have a really cool thing we're doing with poetry and film and art all together from some poetry books. So like I said, because we're not just a publishing house, we're, you know, this octopus, and we have film, we have art, we have food, we have the charity. We have the publishing house. We have a gaming arm. So, you know, we have these eight spaces and the movement. So we take the book and we incorporate it into these eight spaces. Whereas even the biggest publishing house don't have external add-ons that they can kind of shift this into, right? Sometimes a book does really well and it wants to become a movie. Well, Random House is not making movies. They don't have a studio. The book rights, the movie rights get sold to a studio that wants to invest in it. But here we can create the whole effect for the social cause to move forward, whether it's donations from the charity, making a film, creating art, incorporating into food and nutrition, helping the homeless, whatever it may be.
Well, I like that. It's just really great. I think the forward thinking of just multiple platforms, mediums, because, you know, it's like everybody is, you know, wired differently. Some, I mean, yeah, they want to read a book, you know, some want to watch a film, some want to hear a podcast, some want to, mm-hmm. you know, experience food, you know, activists, you name it. Right. I think.
And podcasts, you said, but we have Compassivist Dialogues, which mm-hmm. is essentially purposed to exactly what you just said. You know, some people want to hear from the author. Mm-hmm. So when we have somebody publish, we actually have an interview with them as well. Mm-hmm. And it's not so much an interview, it's a dialogue. And it's about, let's talk, you know, why did you write this? What is it about? What should the reader do reading this book? I mean, is it just entertainment, you know, fireplace reading in a storm? Or is there something going on in this book that you want the reader to kind of pick up on and follow through with? And mm-hmm. so it ignites the book. It makes the book alive, right?
Yeah, I find myself buying books, just people that I like. You know, it may not be the greatest book, but I like their ideas. I like who they are. You feel like you're supporting someone, even if maybe it's something totally new to you or whatever. And I think podcasts and just, you know, social media and just, you know, used to be authors kind of had this like mystical kind of mythical, you know, they just kind of wrote their books and just appeared out of nowhere and, you know, did a, mm-hmm. you know, book tour once in a while and, you know, or did a talk show and that was it. But I just love even getting into the process, getting into what do they really care about? What's their families like? What are they into? You're like, it kind of raises the, like, you're actually buying a person. You're going, mm-hmm. I want to support, you know, Ali, cause I like his company and I like his writing and I like what he's all about. Right. More than
exactly,
you know, even if I don't agree with it or, you know, whatever. And I think
a lot of my friends don't read. A lot of my friends don't read. They don't read at all. Not even. It's that. What is it? TDLR. That's what they always send me. You know, too long, didn't read, or some TLDR or whatever. Yeah. So they send me that sometimes when I write something long, and I know they don't read, right? But they like what I'm trying to do. Right. So you know what they do? They buy every piece of whatever we have coming out from Compassivist. And they don't care, but they're mm-hmm. doing it because they know it's going to the foundation. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of people are going to look at this and say, you know what? This book is helping children. It's helping children in need. It's helping children who don't make it past 5. I don't care about reading, but I care about the kids. Mm-hmm. I'm going to buy 20 copies of this, you know, and give it to schools around me, my kids' schools, my nephew's schools, my niece's schools, and whatever else, or some charities around, and let them have these books there for them to, you know, read or whatever. That's fine. Do that. But you're helping. That's part of what, again, Compassivist Octopus is about.
Love it. Love it. Well, Ali, I want to be sensitive to your time. But before we go, I do want to say, hey, if somebody's out there going, I have a book, I have an idea, I love what you're talking about. How do they get in touch with you? Where's the best place to go? Where do they find you? And we'll go from there.
The best place would be compassivistpublishing.com. And there's a submission page there. And so submit or send us an email. We're real people. We answer. And, you know, so long as people are genuine in the same way that we're trying to make a difference in the world through compassion, genuinely, there shouldn't be a problem. You know, you send us your work, you get in touch with us, you tell us what you're trying to work on. If there's something that we can do together, we're always open to help and support people grow. And we don't have that profit metric because we're not for profit. And our funding is through donations and grants. So we really don't think about, you know, is this book going to sell? I mean, is this what the trend is today? We don't have those questions that other places have, because they're working on a profit model. They have to make sure the book sells. We're not. So as long as the story's good, you know, the point is to promote your story. The point is to make the world a better place with your story. We'll work with you. So, you know, throw us an email, come to the submission page, come through any of Compassivist channels. I mean, you know, there's compassivist.com, there's compassivistfoundation.org, there's Compassivist at Compassivist, all our socials, everywhere. Anywhere you see the word Compassivist, it's a new word. It's not something that you're going to mix up with five other words that, you know, you're going to be like, is this the one? Is that the one? No, it's kind of like McDonald's. There's no two McDonald's, right? You're not going to mess up McDonald's. So find Compassivist wherever it says Compassivist, knock on the door there. Somebody will guide you to the publishing area if that's what you're trying to do.
Well, I will put Compassivist in the show notes and everyone can link to that. Ali, I really love what you're doing. I say that from the bottom of my heart. I think this is a fantastic idea. You're making a difference in the world. You're thinking outside the box. I think anyone that's a writer, creator, that wants to get their stories out there and make a difference, I think this is the way to go. So keep doing what you're doing. And I know you helped a lot of people today. So thanks for sharing your story.
Thank you for having me and thanks for listening.
My pleasure.
Well, there you have it, my friends, Ali from Compassiviste Publishing, and hopefully you caught it. I imagine you did. What a great model of business. I just love this idea of leveraging business publishing for good. And these are the kind of things that we're trying to pay attention to. What are ways in which people are doing good in the world and thinking outside the box? Just because one model works, just because publishing is a certain way, doesn't mean we can't go, well, maybe there's a different way to do this. Maybe there's a different way to make books. Maybe there's a different way to get authors' stories out in the world. Maybe there's a different way of thinking about revenue. I think Ali's onto something pretty special here. So go check out Ali. If you have, if you're a writer and you're looking to get published, go check out what they offer and send Ali an email. He's a really cool guy and can help you point you in the right direction, and maybe working with him might be the thing you're looking for. So encourage you in that. Again, just want to remind you, hey, if you enjoyed this show and you've been following along for a little bit, hey, share the show with friends and family, someone that might find this useful. Also, if you like the show, leave a rating or review wherever you listen to your podcast, iTunes, wherever. I guess that helps the algorithm. That helps the algorithm gods get the show in front of more people. So leave a review, a rating, wherever you listen to your podcast. And tell your friends. And then last, just hey, if you want to stay updated on all that's going on, what I'm up to, what the podcast's up to, I want to be encouraged. 7 Things at 7 is my newsletter on Substack, and you can check that out. I just send out every week 7 things that I'm paying attention to, hopefully encourage you in your art and your life and your work. And go check that out. Love to have you part of the community. So without further ado, it is my time to go, but we'll be back together, Lord willing, very soon, and sharing another interview, another thoughts, another idea, things we're paying attention to. But before I go make some great art with your life. And I'll talk to you real soon.